Spotlighting Maine's business advisors who build their practice through collaboration. This is AceCast. Now, here are your hosts, team experience designer Kim Dakin-Neal and business efficiency strategist Priscilla Hansen-Mahoney.
Broadcasting from Portland, Maine, thanks for tuning in to AceCast. I'm one of your hosts, Kim Dakin-Neal.
And I'm Priscilla Hansen-Mahoney.
Priscilla, you had the pleasure of interviewing Bernard Moore of Innovation Partners International. Now, Bernard is not only a member of the Association for Consulting Expertise, but he's also on the board of directors. And Priscilla, I have to say, it sounds like you had a really intriguing conversation with Bernard.
Bernard is probably one of the most zen, calm, insightful consultants I've ever had the pleasure of speaking with. He has an amazing point of view on how to shift employee experience from chaotic to effective.
I'll bet. He also talks in depth about social architecture, right?
Yes. He talks about empowering employees so they have a more joyous and life-enhancing experience in the workplace. I mean, the information he has to share will be so valuable to our listeners.
Well, I'm really excited to hear the conversation you had with Bernard, so let's get to it. Bernard Moore, that's M-O-H-R, Innovation Partners International.
Today we are here with Bernard Moore, and he is a member of the Association of Consulting Expertise, and we are so thrilled to have him here to talk about his practice with us and share with us his tips for success. Bernard, welcome and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Can you just give us a moment, fill our listeners in on who you are and who you serve?
Absolutely. I can do the best I can. I have been doing the kind of work that I've been doing in one form or another for, I hate to say it, more than 40 years. I actually got into this work as a very young person. I was looking for a part-time job to buy my first car, and I got a job for a management consulting firm, if you can believe that. Of course, the work that I was doing was the work of a gopher. Go for the coffee, go for the photocopies, and so on. But I discovered at least that there was this whole arena of work of helping people in organizations to become not just more effective, but to have a better time at work.
That's fantastic. And what a needed practice that is. What difference it makes for people who have to go to a job every day and they feel energized and appreciated because of someone like you doing your work.
Absolutely. You know, in the Western world, we really define our identity by what we do. When we get together with somebody over coffee or at a cocktail party, one of the very first questions people ask is, well, tell me a little bit about what you do. And the irony of that, of course, is that much of the complaining that we do, much of the moaning and so on, is about the experience that we have at work, which is, I think, terribly unfortunate, because if you think about a day, 24 hours in a day, we sleep approximately 8 hours. That leaves us 16 hours. And of that 16 hours, we spend about half of that time at work. So we spend half of our lives in the workplace. And my thinking has always been, if we could have a more joyous and exciting and fulfilling experience in the workplace, what a difference that would make to the colleagues that we work with, to the people that we're serving, to the services that we're providing to our patients or our clients or our customers. And what kind of a difference might that make to the people that we come home to at
night?
Exactly. You know?
Yeah. How was your day, honey? That conversation could change.
Yeah, absolutely. Instead of, oh my gosh, let me tell you the story about what happened today that was so awful.
Yeah.
To shift that to... Wow, I had an incredible day, you know, and I felt alive and I was really using the skills that I have. The experience that we have in the workplace impacts us as parents, as partners, as citizens. If we experience a sense of community, a sense of dignity, a sense of meaning, if we have a chance to learn and grow as human beings in the workplace, all of that, I think, translates into a different kind of society.
It's so true. And it all comes from how you work with your employees. It all starts with them.
It starts with each one of us It starts with what I like to call the social architecture of the organization.
Yes.
Which I know is a term that makes a lot of people roll their eyes. But if you've ever walked into a cathedral and felt that sense of awe and uplift as you look at the columns that soar up towards the sky, you know, that's the physical architecture of the organization. The social architecture has a lot to do with the things like the information that we're given and the authorities that we have to make decisions and the opportunities to learn and grow and to experience a sense of respect because somebody's not always looking over our shoulder. Mm-hmm. All of that is actually what we call social architecture and something that can be consciously chosen or, in my language, can be designed.
I just had an experience just like that. I think what you're referring to. I just flew with an airline. I'm not going to name the airline. And we were delayed. We ended up not getting home till 1 a.m. We're supposed to get home at 4 p.m. And that particular airline, my husband and I were getting new tickets because we had missed our connecting flight. And he just happened to say to me, "Honey, when we get our new tickets, after we'll go grab a bite to eat." And the guy at the ticket counter overheard him say that to me and gave us vouchers for dinner. Didn't have to clear it with a manager, just simply did that as a way of saying, you know, sorry you were delayed. And that has made all the difference for my husband and I. He made a loyal customer from us.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what you're talking about when you say social architecture.
Absolutely. And in that case, the social architecture was the policy that had been put in place by the organization to allow or enable or to support that person taking that action. There are so many times that I've been in a similar kind of spot when the person behind the counter has said, "I wish I could do this for you, but I'm not allowed
to." Isn't it frustrating? Yeah. Because that customer service representative wants to please his customers. His hands are tied.
Very much so.
By his own organization that he works for.
Very much so.
So tell me, what brings life into your work? How do you bring about this social architecture and change?
Well, the thing that brings life to me as a resource person to folks in organizations is really their smiles and their laughter and their joy as they grapple with the question of, you mean we really have a chance to change how we work together and it's up to us and you're not going to write a report that tells us how to change and you're not going to give us a lecture on how we should be better employees and you're not just going to give us a training course, but you're actually going to allow us to redesign, to re-architect, to recreate together the way we work together and the things that either constrain us or would enable us. And when people experience that for the first time, in my experience, they're skeptical, right? Mm-hmm. They're skeptical because in the past, we have always walked into a work situation where all of that is a given and we're asked to work, but we're seldom asked to come to work and work on work itself. What I see is as people light up, as they begin to have conversations, the very act of having a conversation with another person to say, what's important to you? What would you like to create? What would we like to create together? And how might we do that is a very life-giving
process. Sounds like you're empowering every position in that company that way, too. You're not just asking the CEO what to do or how to change, but it sounds like you're empowering every single position.
Most of my clients tend to be folks who have trained for a long time to do the work that they're doing. So doctors and nurses and radiologists and university professors and research in, you know, trying to do things like cure cancer, the content of which I know nothing about typically.
Sure.
But they are the experts in that. And I have some capacity to engage them in the work of becoming designers, becoming people who combine energy and creativity and a vision of the future and translate that into very practical changes that will help them do whatever it is that they do in a more exciting and effective and collaborative way.
So when you're working with these doctors and physicians and people who've been doing their jobs for a very long time, they're experts in their own field, I imagine you must come up against some resistance to change. How do you overcome inertia and resistance to change in your work?
Most of us have never been asked to participate in this kind of activity. So to begin with, we're skeptical. And we have a sense that we're going to be manipulated, maybe. That there's already a plan in the back of somebody's pocket. What are they up to now? Is this the latest and greatest fad, you know? Am I going to survive this? So there's both fears and there's a little bit of hope. What we have found works very well is to begin the process with, and I'm sorry, I say process because I'm Canadian.
I was going to say, there was a hint of
yeah, right,
A.
Yeah. But we begin the process by inviting people to talk with each other, to ask each other questions about who they are as people and what gives life for them or to them in their work on a daily basis, and to share with each other a story about when they have been fully engaged, fully excited, really at the top of their game, doing what they have trained to do and doing it in a way that has made them feel very good about their choice of career. So as they begin to share that with each other and they begin to share answers to questions such as, what's the one thing in this place that is so important? What's the baby in the bathwater we don't want to throw out as we move forward? They begin to connect in a different kind of way. So it's a different conversation. Mm. It's a conversation about what matters, what gives you joy and energy, what allows you to do the work that you really want to do, as opposed to conversations that spiral downward. You know, tell me about what's awful around here. Mm-hmm. Tell me about what keeps you from being a better person. Tell me about all the problems that we have. You know, we've all grown up in this world where we are taught when we are at our best, we should be problem solvers. Mm-hmm. And I think, of course, that's important. You know, when I turn the key, of course, we don't turn keys in our cars anymore. We just push buttons.
Well, in your car, you might. Right, yeah, in my car, I turn a key and I pray to God it starts.
Well, yeah. You know, and of course, when it doesn't start, you say, okay, what's the problem here?
Exactly.
Am I out of gas? Is the battery dead? You know, problem solving in that sense is a great tool and a great skill when you're working with inanimate objects. Mm-hmm. But when you're trying to solve me as a problem, it's not the same thing. I start to resent being identified
as
the
a problem.
Problem. You know, and it doesn't make me feel very creative and collaborative.
Right.
You know, I much prefer the language of what is it that we want to create together.
And I love that you mentioned that you use stories, their own personal stories, to express that, because what better way of getting to the root of something is other than to say, well, what's your story? What brought you here? What brings you to the work that you do?
Absolutely. And sometimes people say to me, Bernard, don't people have to be trained to be storytellers?
Mm.
And, you know, the interesting thing is all of us tell stories all the time.
Sure.
You know, most of the stories we tell about are about how bad things are, you know, about the terrible thing that happened on the way to work, you know, or the terrible thing that happened at work, or the terrible thing that happened with my doctor or my dentist or whatever, you know. So we tell stories. We have that capacity. The switch here is to invite people to tell stories so that we can get information about what works and what gives life and the conditions that support that. Because we do need to study the world that we're in. We need to understand it, but we can understand it from the perspective of what we call positive deviations. You know, a positive deviation is like the story you just told me about being at the airport.
Right.
That was an unusual circumstance, but it was a positive circumstance.
Sure.
And we can say, so what allowed that to happen? Because we'd like to create more of that.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes the stories we tell ourselves aren't even true. They're made up in our heads and we elaborate. So we are definitely storytellers. We tell ourselves stories all the time. How do you measure impact or success in your work? How do you know that you have, you know, my work here is done?
You know, that's a great question, especially when you're dealing with complex issues like how well are we treating our patients?
Mm-hmm.
But of course, every system that I've been in fact, has gazillions of outcome measures.
Sure.
And the question actually is finding those metrics, those measures that we consider to be meaningful and that we can use as a way of monitoring our way, our journey forward to tell us, you know, we're halfway up the mountain or, you know, we're another night or two before we get to the hut where we can rest or something like that.
Sure, sure. Push but, a little further.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let me just tell you one story. I was working with a medical center at a teaching hospital where one of the concerns was the handoff of patients from one department to another. And that's, of course, as you may know, a recent study has suggested that there are roughly, and it's very hard to measure these things, but roughly 250,000 people a year that die in hospitals for reasons that are not related to their illness or their disease.
Wow.
They die simply because of the term that we use is medical error.
Mm.
And a lot of that has to do with unintentional miscommunication. That happens a lot when you go from one department to another department, you know, and,
sure.
and you're passed off. So we were looking at how can we measure the impact of doing better handoffs between departments. And certainly we looked at some of the traditional measures such as patient satisfaction. We looked at the rating that people have of the emergency department experience as patients. We looked at the rating that nurses give themselves in terms of their satisfaction with their experience. And then we looked at some more what I would call quantitative or objective measures. In this case, we looked at nutritional assessment. We looked at completion of skin assessments in the emergency department. We looked at compliance with cardiac enzyme regimens.
Wow.
We looked at medication administration record compliance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The important thing is that there are a lot of measures in all of our lives that we can use. It's really just selecting the ones that matter and saying, let's use these and let's learn as we go along. For me, the whole question about measurement is how are we going to use it? You know, getting an A, B, C, or D on a paper that I wrote in university is moderately helpful, you know, but it doesn't tell me why I got it or why I didn't get an A and I got
sure.
a C instead of an A. There's no process in place to help me learn. So,
or why it's important.
Or why it's important, absolutely. So the idea of measuring to judge is an idea that I think is not very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Measuring so that you can learn and improve is terribly helpful,
yes.
I think.
Yes, I love that. And just so we can wrap up and just get a little bit more about you, Bernard, what guiding principles help you in your work?
It's a great question. The dominant guiding principle is really that people support what they help to create. I think we each have a right to be the architects of our own futures. And in fact, a responsibility. In an open and a democratic society, I think we have a responsibility to build the kind of world that we and our children will thrive in.
Yes.
And we have a right to have that opportunity. Again, it's in the workplace, the guiding principle is that people support what they help to create. And part of our challenge is to find helpful ways to allow people to create their futures together. We were mentioning earlier the role of the CEO, and we were saying, you know, it can't be just the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody in the organization, including people at that level,
exactly.
have a perspective and information that needs to be shared
yes.
in the process. So, and a second guiding principle, which I think for me is equally important, is the questions that we ask determine the future that we create.
Oh, wow, that's
and
a great one.
By that, what I really mean is, if we look at questions about pathology and disease in relationships and the way we work together, we can answer those questions easily. But what we'll get is information that suggests we are pathological and diseased and broken people. And that's certainly a piece of us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a very helpful foundation to build a future on.
I actually think that's a tweetable comment. The questions that we ask determine the future we create.
Absolutely.
I think that's the takeaway
yeah.
right there. That is a wonderful way of thinking about it. Because if you think about how can we make this organization better instead of, you know, what is wrong with you,
yeah.
that's a different path that you're going to take.
Or even the question of, what is it that's working here that we can build on?
Mm.
You know, what are the things that we can leverage and move forward and create more of?
Absolutely. Bernard, I could probably sit and talk with you all day, and I think our listeners could definitely benefit from that. But we do have to wrap up. We are running low on time. How can our listeners contact you and have more conversations with you?
go to our website, which is innovationpartners.com.
Innovationpartners.com. You can also contact Bernard through our Association of Consulting Expertise at consultexpertise.com. Thank you so much, Bernard, for being here today.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
What a terrific interview.
Wasn't it, Kim?
He's a fascinating person, Bernard. I have always been a little curious about him. I mean, I've been a lot curious about a number of the ACE consultants, but he in particular, and this interview just bears it out, he's an incredibly thoughtful, engaged, and enthusiastic person.
He's incredibly intuitive and sensitive and so calming. I felt so calmed and relaxed during our interview. It was just a pleasure speaking with him.
Yeah, I can get that sense. And I got really excited hearing him really talk about the kinds of things that drive him in his work. And I love the term social architecture. That's been around for a while, but I think the way that he explained it makes sense to me, just in terms of how you go about intentionally creating culture.
And what really, really drove that home is when he said, the questions we ask determine the future we create.
Oh yeah, that was beautiful. Very tweetable. You were absolutely right. And also just the notion, we don't think about this very often, that our work experience, because of the amount of time we spend, upwards of 16 hours a day, I mean, given the commute, given all the prep and stuff, 16 hours a day, the amount of time we spend and our experience at work impacts the kinds of people we are outside the work environment. It's so true.
What really made me start thinking about it was just the ripple effect that creating and helping our employees have a more joyous and exciting experience in the workplace can actually change the world.
That's exactly right.
So what an impact Bernard's work makes.
Also, just his notion of encouraging people to use their innate creativity to shape their experience, especially around change and producing needed changes, and the whole notion of, I understand it, is appreciative inquiry, which is focusing on the positive. What are we doing right that we can build on for the future?
Yeah, and giving the employees the empowerment to have personal responsibility for their actions.
Oh, yes. Huge. Instead of looking to and complaining about the hierarchy.
Yes.
What can you do to take initiative to change your situation?
Yes.
It's really needed work that Bernard does.
It made me excited to know that someone is helping, especially when he said he's in hospitals helping them create the communications and the structures, considering the statistics he gave about the amount of mistakes that get made.
Scary. Yeah.
Thank goodness someone like Bernard is doing the work. We need an army of Bernards
out there.
Exactly.
So, well, nicely done, Priscilla.
Thank you. Thank you, Kim. And again, just to let our listeners know, if they want to contact Bernard and have deeper conversation with him, he is available on his website, innovationpartners.com, and at Twitter at Bernard Moore. And I am sure any conversation that you have with him is going to be enlightening. If you enjoyed this interview, you can listen to more at consultexpertise.com.